Stephen, Lindy, you listened to the Graeme Samuel interview talking about the grocery report that the ACCC has put together and given to the federal government and some of the recommendations in order to bring about more competition, better pricing. What sort of thing do you think they've done? What sort of job have they done of this? Have they done the right thing by the consumer?
Well, I think Graeme certainly sounded like he was right across the detail, which is not surprising at one level because I think his family actually has quite a substantial investment in the DFO chain. So, you know, Moorabbin Airport, yep, and Southern Cross Station. And I was very impressed with his grasp of the knowledge. And, basically coming straight out and saying that, you know, it's pretty much a cosy duopoly, Coles and Woolies, and pointing to a few specific things. Planning right up there. I mean, you hear the planning complaint with the likes of Westfield, which has, you know, run campaigns against rival developments. ABC Learning has used the planning laws to stop community centres.
Explain how that works.
Someone wants to build a grocery store or a supermarket or open a pub or whatever, and the community doesn't complain, but the rival commercial competitor complains. So Woolies regularly, almost routinely, lodges planning complaints talking about, you know, congestion and amenity, mm-hmm, and stuff, when it's just a pure, straight spoiling tactic on your competitor, which is quite outrageous. So I think that it's a tricky one because it's all state planning laws, and if you ban rival commercial players from competing, well then, you know, does that intrude on the rights of, you know, community groups, etc., etc. The restrictive leases, I think, is very interesting as well. That you know, when Coles or Woolies signs up with Westfield, that they say that Aldi can't be here, or, you know, I live out near Doncaster, and for a long time, the Meyer lease at Westfield Doncaster said that DJs can't be here. And that clause only got lifted when Meyer was sold to private equity and Westfield renegotiated and said, right, now you've got to let us put DJs in. And they've subsequently flogged 50% of the centre for $700 million offshore and got a great price because they managed to get DJs in. So I think the idea of banning that practice where you cannot have a lease which says that a competitor is not allowed to set up in the same shopping centre would be a good thing. Mm. I think the elephant in the room that hasn't really been mentioned is what's called forced divestiture, which is a law in the UK and the US where some commercial party which has too much power, which the laws deem to be abusing its powers, is forced to sell stores.
Oh.
And you've seen that used regularly in the US in particular. I think what happened in Australia was the fall of Franklin's about 4 or 5 years ago was where we really got a problem because there used to be three vigorous competitors. Franklin's fell, the best stores got cherry-picked by Coles and Woolies. We then lapsed into a comfortable duopoly where they've got 70% of the dry goods market, which is a dry grocery market, which is the worst concentration in the world. And it's no wonder that the Woolies share price has gone from $10 to $30 since then. And the statistic which I always think best demonstrates the power in particular of Woolworths, I mean, Woolworths is worth $30 billion. Wesfarmers, with all of Coles and everything else, is worth about $18 billion. So you can see how big and powerful Woolies is that Woolworths has a negative balance sheet of about $500 million each half year. So in other words, they have negative assets. So they're so powerful that they delay paying their suppliers much longer than it takes them to move their goods. And so they're a virtual supermarket.
Wow.
And that is just pure power, where they just tell their...
We're
not going to pay you for 90 days. Yeah. We're 40% of the market.
Where else are you going to divest if you stop?
Get stuffed.
Yes.
And I've heard multinationals, big $1 billion of turnover multinationals, complain about Woolworths and say they stifle innovation. Because we come along and say, new product, and Woolies says, thank you, we'll take 60% of the margin or thereabouts. So I thought very interesting that Graeme revealed that the grocerychoice.gov.au website reveals that of the 61 regions, Coles is cheaper than Woolies in 52 of 61. So, I mean, at sort of one level you feel sorry for Woolies. They're copying it left, right and centre. But I think it's good to have a bit of sunlight on this.
And if you're copying it, look at why and lift your game.
Well, I just look at the share price and just say, look at the virtual supermarket and say, I mean, the numbers all point to it. And I'm also interesting to hear Graeme say that the competition's quite good in the fresh food.
Yes,
and I think that
surprised quite a number of people.
And that farmers are getting 50 to 60% of the final price that supermarkets are charging. So the whole, you know, that thing you hear about coffee growers in PNG get 3 cents for every cup of coffee, you know, that's sold for $3. You hear that sort of statistic thrown around, which is the general allegation that the middlemen, the multinationals,
all the
take all the money.
Yeah,
and I think in terms of the power relationship between farmer and grocery duopoly in Australia, clearly it's not as bad.
But would that have included, you know, your P&G coffee grower, or would it have just included your beef producer in
Victoria? Coffee, it's processed and manufactured. That's where you get the whole value chain, whereas the apple grower is straight to Woolies, and then the apple grower is getting 60% of the final price, which isn't as bad as a lot of people thought it was going to be. So,
talking of shares, though, and the Woolies share price going up, someone sent me a text earlier saying that if competition breaks out and we get other players in the market, or, as you say, the sunlight starts to shine and place people like Woolies and Coles have to start adjusting what they're charging and their practices, because their share price is so well that there's probably a number of people who are in this particular market using them as a way of propping up their portfolios. So if things start to change, could we see a dramatic change, and would that affect, say, some superannuation funds for certain people?
Well, it's a really interesting question, because one of my big criticisms of the Australian corporate scene is that too many of the superstars are just the local service sector oligopolies. You know, banks, Telstra, Qantas, the supermarket duopoly Westfield. You know, there's no Nokia, Google, Sony genuinely international success stories. Success in Australia is getting a dominant position locally and ripping off your customers. And you know, I don't think it's great that we've got our biggest supermarket company is worth $30 billion. I think they've sucked up too much of the value. They were better when they were worth $5 billion, or they were floated for $2 billion. I mean, they've just become this giant. And that's why I think, you know, that you need the forced divestiture laws. The same thing applies with Telstra. The same thing applies with Qantas. Qantas is a worldwide airline, but they also have an incredibly dominant incumbent position. It's called market power, which they use. And that's why they're going to make $1.4 billion this year. And Westfield, I mean, there's no other shopping centre company in the world which has such a dominant position as Westfield in this market. And Alan Fells makes the comment that rents are often 20% of retail sale price in Australia. In Europe, they're 10%. In other words, the landlords, and Westfield's the biggest, have sucked up too much of the value. And so when you look, when you add up the value of our banking cartel, the value of Westfield, Telstra, Qantas, all these big guys, you ask yourself, how is the rest of the economy going, and how are they being serviced by all these locally inward-focused, not exporting providers who have such dominant positions?
So not making anything, basically.
That's the thing. Woolies has a job and Coles has a job to efficiently deliver other people's products to the consumers.
Yes.
They do not have a job to become $30 billion worth of value, making a huge 50% profit margin or whatever it is, and having a, you know, negative stock of $500 million because they're so brutally strong.
It's a really good point. Let's look at the Reserve Bank today. Left interest rates on hold, which was completely expected. But when do you think they'll come down?
Well, I think I'm backing next month. So the key quote today was from the Reserve Bank: with demand slowing, the board's view is that the scope to move towards a less restrictive stance on monetary policy in the period ahead is increasing. Now, I think that we've just seen a 28% fall in commodity prices over the last few weeks, which is the biggest fall in decades. So it's happening everywhere. I mean, the stock market's off 30%. The oil prices come off from 147 to 120. The likes of zinc and copper and all these mining boom things look like the bubble's bursting, particularly last night. And we're seeing all these terrible sentiment figures coming out. The Kiwis are basically the New Zealand Treasury has today confirmed that they'll be going into recession, the first Western world economy to go into recession, and they had the highest interest rates in the world, and they've just cut them last week. So we have the second highest interest rates in the world. We are slowing fairly quickly, although we do have some sort of buffer from the resources boom, although that particular bubble looks to be bursting as well. So I think everything's pointing to the fact that the Reserve Bank probably went a bit too high, and at least the one saving grace we've got is that if things really get bad, they can cut a lot. I mean, we've got a long way to go to get down to the Europeans and the Americans on interest rates.
But will banks follow suit, though, given that they've been more than happy to raise the interest rates for their individual home loans, quite apart from what the RBA is doing? Will they respond if the RBA starts to cut?
Well, I don't think they'll pass on the whole lot, because I think the biggest challenge we've got as an economy is the foreign debt refinancing, is that there's close to $700 billion of foreign debt, and foreign debt markets have dried up. So the local banks are shouldering a huge burden in terms of refinancing a lot of this foreign debt. And their cost of finance is rising. So I think there's an argument. I mean, our bank share prices are off 40% from the top. They're still worth $160 billion, the big four. They're tracking along better than any other banking cartel in the world. But I do think there's an argument that there's a big refinancing job to take a lot of this foreign debt back onto the Australian balance sheet, back onto the balance sheet of our banks, and they probably do need to widen their margins a little bit. So I wouldn't, if I was forecasting 12 months ahead, I'd say interest rates will be official interest rates will be between 1 and 2 percentage points lower. I think we are going into a sharp slowdown.
And are you calling it?
No, I think that before we get the R word, you will see more than a percentage point cut in interest rates. I mean,
and that will stop the.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, what's happened is mortgage holders in Australia have copped 3 percentage points over the last year. And when you've got $850 billion in mortgages, that's a $25 billion hit. Hmm. That's pretty stark. And I think that the Reserve Bank is very cognizant of the fact that they kept rates too high for too long in triggering the recession we had to have in 1990-91. And they will move before we get there. So if we have one negative quarter of growth, just watch them go. I mean, they'll be dropping interest rates willy-nilly. They'll be doing half percentage point hits. And they'll be working very hard to avoid that second quarter of negative growth to trigger the R word. So at least they've kept their powder dry so far. They've got plenty of ammunition in the tank. They can cut rates to 4% if they have to. Sure, the dollar might hit 70 cents if they do that, but we've been to 50. We can handle 70.
Everybody here suddenly went, it's 97. I'm going overseas and made plans in the next 6 months.
Well, it's 92 and falling today because the whole commodity price is coming off the cliff overnight. So... the exporters would like a lower currency as well. So, I'm pretty confident we'll get a rate cut next month.
Can I say we live in interesting economic times?
We live in very interesting economic. I've never seen anything like it.
It has been remarkable. Just in the 3 years that you and I have been talking, hasn't it been a rollercoaster ride?
Well, stock market almost tripling, unbelievable credit boom, unbelievable commodities boom, unbelievable property boom, world's first global liquidity event. World's first global credit crisis, commodity prices crashing, world's second highest interest rates, and still full employment. I mean, Alan Kohler wrote a very interesting column this week online saying this could be the first full employment recession, where basically the way people lose their jobs is they don't lose their jobs, they just get less hours in the cafe and less hours, less shift work. And because we're such a casualised workforce, we won't see it in full-time people being retrenched. We'll just see it in people working less than they want to.
Yes.
It won't show up in the official statistics.
So everyone's sitting at home if they can afford to have one and find one. Stephen Mayne, thank you very much.